Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, we're going to be getting into a discussion around, international trade, more specifically, what it takes to do business with the rest of the world. We often talk about the fact that South Africa is, small open economy, and, there's always this thing around balance of trade. On the one hand, you're trying to attract foreign investment into the country, but also at the same time, as a nation, we are also trying to get more and more South African goods into the rest of the world, because that does, at least from a macro point of view, increase your export earnings, foreign currency earnings, all of that, and that helps to drive up where the level of the economy is. But what are the realities of actually making some of that, happen on the ground? So for today, we are joined by a business person and one of the country's biggest banks to maybe unpack some of what goes into international trade, what actually goes into getting goods from South Africa into the rest of the world, and some of the realities, to make that dream happen. On the line, I am joined by Lesego, the host Zapfel, who is from Moedi Wines, and then we're also joined by Lutando Vuba, who is the executive head for international trade over at Standard Bank. Team, greetings to you today.
Hi, thank you, Mudiwa.
Hi, Mudiwa. Thank you very much.
Lesego, I'm just going to start with you, for today's conversation, and to say, firstly, is to check whether I got the pronunciation of the business correct, and then second is to maybe get a sense of your profile as a business and the type of products that you are exporting into the rest of the world.
No, thank you so much, Mudiwa. So our brand is pronounced Moedi, so Moedi Wines. It's a Setswana name. Our focus when we chose the name specifically was to, for the brand to have an authentic African identity. And so that was very, very important. So Moedi means a stream of water in my native language, Setswana. And at Moedi Wines, we are focused on wine production. So we have three still wines that we export to markets such as the US, Europe, and the United Kingdom as well. And I started the business because, one, South Africa is one of the top producers of wines in the world. And as someone who's lived overseas, particularly in the US, I really struggled to find South African wines on the shelves, but also saw it as an opportunity for us to actually create a brand that really tells our story as South Africa, and also drive some of the projects that are aligned to our brand, the work that we're doing with beekeepers across the country, and, the work that we're doing with orphans as well, and making sure that our brand is relevant as well, targeting mainly like Gen Zs and millennials. And so I started this journey a little bit over 2 years ago, and it's been such an exciting yet challenging as well, launching a wine brand as a Black female in this big and exciting industry.
Maybe we can just dive a little bit deeper, Lesego, into some of those challenges, because when it comes to wine specifically, to your earlier point, we often think of wine as being one of those products that South Africa is famous for. I've been to a number of parts of the world, and it's always quite interesting where you see South African wines that are on a menu list, at a particular establishment. And I guess the impression on the outside is that, wow, South Africa's winemakers are doing very well. Surely if you just, crack yourself into that market, you're going to be, you are good and set for life. Is that really the case? Because you're 2 years into your journey, what are the actual realities on the ground, realizing that winemaker's dream in South Africa?
Yeah, I think number one, you need to look at it from a business standpoint, which is where I sort of like started. You know, our competitive advantage here is that, you know, we're actually amongst the top 10 producers in the world globally. So meaning that when it comes to quality and taste, we are very, very competitive. And I think what's a differentiator and advantage for us is that we produce in rands versus US dollars or euros. So, and I think what I saw as a challenge overseas was that we were not doing a good job, I guess, marketing ourselves, because, you know, it's one thing to have a product, but it's another thing to actually invest real capital in advertising and also in telling our story, like in those targeted markets, right? And I think a lot of the farmers, from the research that I did even prior to starting the brand, was that, you know, the marketing side of the business is very complex. Even for wines of South Africa, it requires a lot of capital, which, you know, generally governments of other countries, such as like, you know, the wines from Australia, the governments would actually invest a lot of capital in promoting wines of Australia or wines of New Zealand. And I think that's been a challenge for us as a country. And yeah, and also that, you know, we needed to work together in this industry to sort of come up with like a united story. And so so the challenges are a lot, but I you know, saw an opportunity in terms of like looking at one region, promoting one region, which is the Swartland region, and also targeting specific countries where I feel like my story would resonate more with the consumers, like the United States, the United Kingdom. You know, the Brits are generally familiar with South African wines due to history and proximity to the continent as well. And, you know, our recent launch in the Danish market as well. So the challenges are there, but at the same time, there are tons of like solutions and opportunities globally.
On this point then, maybe Lutando, you can step in to give us a sense of some of the practicalities that go into a business like this, because Lesego is telling us about being in business for 2 years, you know, having launched in places like the US and recently in the Danish market. She's actually alluding to a lot of complexity around getting product from South Africa into some of those markets. Where does Standard Bank actually step into here? Either Standard Bank as an institution or an institution like Standard Bank, you know, what are the gaps that you're trying to plug here? Is there anything unique, you know, to the South Africa's wine market, or just trying to get products from SA into the rest of the world? Because once again, from the outside, one would imagine that an established product like wine would have established channels, corridors, you know, agencies, rules, regulations that, you know, would help to smoothen out, you know, a lot of the processes for a person like Lesego. But she's actually alluding to a number of complexities and challenges there.
Thank you, Maduro, for that question. It's a very good one. I think as Ashgana Bank, as a group, we found a purpose, and we're committed to it, that Africa is our home and we drive our growth. And whilst that can be a nice catchphrase and has the right affection, it's very important for us to put practical steps and elements to that. How do we really drive that growth? And so, and us thinking about trade that have been facilitating for over 162 years. I mean, the bank was founded on trade, you know. We were helping wool exporters in Port Elizabeth do trade. So when you look at the history of the organization, certainly in modern day Africa and where we find ourselves, we know that the big opportunity and directly the barrier for Africa is its industrialization. And so when you look at that and you look at how other countries have navigated that and have come about, you know, becoming more industrialized and therefore more developed, it has been really being deliberate and intentional around how through policy, but then also the private sector, driving and enabling that for its country and therefore its economy. And so as the group, with having our footprint in 20 African markets, And international presence in the likes of the US, UK, UAE, and China. It is definitely upon us to play a role in this. And really, we see it as our responsibility to do so. Therefore, what we are doing is really looking at not just being an institution where a business considers when it comes to the financing and they have to borrow or if they have to do a payment, but really looking at how do we use this infrastructure that I just, you know, highlighted to enable, how do we use our convening power and the relationships, the strategic relationships that we have, and therefore also the market presence that we have in other markets to facilitate and enable market access. Market access is really helping businesses get into markets, diversify their supply chains, whether it's finding suppliers in other markets. There's some key learnings and lessons that came out of the COVID period, where we saw a lot more businesses more intentionally and deliberately after having been forced to think about diversifying the supply chain. Following COVID, it was the Russia-Ukraine conflict, which then further enhanced this need to really look at the global arena of trade and how with the advent of geopolitics, there's also an element of climate change, how that begins to directly impact supply chains. And therefore, this year, last year into 2024, the conflict in the Middle East affecting the Red Sea, which is a key channel for shipping of ships connecting Southeast Asia and further, you know, and Africa to Europe. And we saw that impact as well. So there's this continual theme that is forcing businesses to rethink the supply chain or diversify the supply chain. And the other one, which is a big one, which is how do I get my products into more markets? And sometimes for a small business, that means getting it into, you know, other corporates within the market that are existing. Or it means that, you know, I start to get access into new markets. And for us, it's a very, very intentional, deliberate role around that. So there's this theme around market access, and that's what we are doing with Dua. Very practically so, achieved much more of our gains in the China corridor. We started building traction on the intra-Africa corridor. US is also now on our radar, forging those relationships to be able to help businesses not just finance them and help them with payments, but how do we actually help them with accessing this market? And the Circus business is a good example of that, where they've gone and you know, pay the fees, you know, pay the school fees to really be in the market and active. And so our intention is really to gather more you know, insights from her through her business. And then see how, what do we enable, further enable for the other businesses that are looking at the same market where Le Circo is operating, saying that we want to access that market. So that's what we are doing practically at Standard Bank Group and reporting this from small business to all the large businesses to help them with market access. In addition to assisting with the financing piece and cross-border payments.
So let's get into what a relationship like the one with a business like Le Circo's actually entails, right? From a Standard Bank point of view, do you go out and look for the Le Circo's of this world, or does a business like Moedi Wines, you know, come and say, hey, you know, these are the challenges that we're facing and we need assistance here? That's the first part. And then secondly, you know, what are the levels of engagement that are perhaps happening? Is it about settling, you know, bills and payments in foreign currency? Is it assisting with licensing and registration? You know, is it about shipment? Is it about, you know, finding access to market and, you know, some of those other parts of the world? What's actually happening, you know, in that relationship or in such a relationship?
Thanks.
Le Circo, maybe we'll start with you on this one.
Yeah, so I'll just from like a business perspective, I think, you know, from our experience, expanding globally involves, you know, navigating multiple challenges. And I think what I've learned even with the bank is that, you know, they're not just, as Tando mentioned earlier, it's not just a bank extending a loan to you or anything. There's actually a lot more that banks like Standard Bank like offers, right, to businesses like ourselves. And those could be like insights into regulatory compliance, which is one of the challenges that, you know, you face, because there's tons of like documents and paperwork that you need to prepare, right, for exports. Big challenge for us is, you know, currency fluctuation. You know, as a business, we are trading in rand, right? So, I mean, we're selling to the US market. And so, which is also can be challenging, but having a bank to help you navigate that, it's very instrumental. And also, you know, things like, you know, establishing trusted distribution network. So for us, you know, as Mwedi Wines, breaking into the US market required, you know, overcoming logistical hurdles. You know, as mentioned earlier, building brand recognition in a highly competitive industry, you know, and I think, you know, from the Standard Bank's perspective, you know, and as in African trade finance and all of that, coming in and providing those solutions and insights, it gives us confidence to like scale and grow as an Africa-based business.
Lutando?
I think, thank you. And Lesego has captured quite some key elements to that. And in addition to that, your question was two-pronged. So the first part is we interact with those businesses that we would call have the export readiness. And so let me elaborate a bit on that. So they would have the right registration in the market that they operate in with the relevant authorities or bodies that they need to be registered with to export. So that's the first key requirement. The other one then is around understanding that particular product that they want to export and the markets that they are targeting, or what is the policy enabling environment look like. So, you know, are there trade protocols required for that particular product, especially if it's a raw unprocessed product? A good example of that, if you want to export avocado to China and you are in Zambia where good avocado grows, you're unable to do that because the trade protocol between Zambia and China is not in place. So the policy and enabling piece is a key one. If it's in the regional context, so it means intra-Africa, the regional customs unions would look at what is an enablement environment look like for may be able to trade that particular product. So that's an important consideration, and therefore where we choose to focus, we'll focus then on those opportunity areas where that particular product can be traded and faces the sort of least barriers to get into that particular market. And then staying with the same sort of frame, then look at these different regions or corridors, as we refer to them, where that particular product is most opportune in terms of its demand and likelihood to really find the market. So we find that in the US, there's demand for a lot of fruits, but also packaged products. Whereas with the EU, it's fruits, dominated by fruits and then in the wines, and then also some packaged products. And in China, we're finding a lot more that look for the raw unprocessed product, the nuts and fruits and, you know, the sesame seeds being high in demand. So these sort of then play into how we then consider where does your product really fit best in terms of that market demand and, you know, its tradability. And then the other piece is then to how do we link you into the opportunities into that market. So we've gone into and the various sort of iterations around this, being key expos in those particular regions or markets, or it could be our capability to do matchmaking sessions, which these could be virtual, hybrid, or physical. And then the others, we leverage strategic partnerships we have. I think this is our strong sort of, you know, competitive advantage of having strategic partnerships in each of the markets that we're in, that then helps us facilitate the B2B connection. That's really ways that facilitate then access to that market. In some markets, particular products are so high in demand that that process of getting into and finding a buyer is much quicker than others. And so that's also another key factor to consider. And I think Lisa highlighted the point earlier around our product and how it's marketed internationally and her need to really play a more sort of deliberate role in that space. I think that you'll find with most regions around the world, we see it same in the UAE, we see the same in China, where, you know, the best of our products are not getting visibility now in that market. And also the visibility that we have this product is also very subdued. So there is a role that, you know, between the government and also just how we, you know, manage the SA Inc. brand, in particular South Africa or African brands, how we manage all those abroad becomes very, very important. And I think industry bodies, particularly trade investment promotion agencies, have a really critical role to play in this, together with the consulates, new embassies in those markets, to really elevate that profile of African products in the regions where they are.
Lutando, very keen, just as a quick follow-up to what you've just said, around, different markets, doing that due diligence on, what's in demand in a specific country or in a specific market versus others, and what are some of the nitty-gritties that you need to have in place to get something done. Because wine is such an established market in a country like South Africa, from a Standard Bank point of view, and I guess solutioning, right? Do you find that there's almost a ready-made way in which, winemakers, move their product and move into particular markets? And I guess the way that Standard Bank then approaches those businesses, or do you find yourself having to tailor to specific business needs? Because in telecoms, for example, there is a set way in which you enter a particular market, you have to get the licensing, you have to get, then after that, you then have to start putting down infrastructure capital, making sure that you're engaging with the communities before you build your towers, all of that stuff. Like, there's a set way in which things are done on that end. But when it comes to wine and a business, like Moedi Wines, how do you, I guess, solution? Is there a ready-made, template of, okay, this is a wine business, this is how we move forward? Or are we, building the ship as we're sailing it, so to say?
Yes, a very good question. So I think when it comes to a wine business, there'll be the banking piece, and this is how we bank the business, and they've got to finance them, and we look at them and how we support them in the running of the operations and growing. So that's the banking side of it. And then the market access side of it. And I think the banking side of it is really sort of within the parameters of how we look and assess businesses subject to the bank's policies, and the way we look at these things. When it comes to the market access side of it, really it's a process where we have to backwards integrate. So in other words, we would need to understand, okay, where it's a wine business, okay, of the different regions that I spelled out earlier. Where does this product have, good uptake generally? So wine generally. And then in particular, we'll look at the South African wine. Where is it doing well versus not? So then that particular market and what's required, to get into that market with the product is then the steps that we're able to outline to then the prospective client who's then a prospective exporter. So Lesejo, in this case, with Moedi Wines, she's already done this. So she can explain a bit more detail, in particular, U.S. corridor or the U.S. market, which is, for me, from the other regions that we've assessed, has much more complexity to get your product in there. They have what they call a three-tier system where they need you to be the exporter. And you need to have an importer in the U.S. And then that importer needs to have a distributor. And in some products, the two can't be the same. And then the distributor will then distribute to the retailer, whoever the end user is. And the end user in this space is likely who then sells to the consumer. So that's the US system. Whereas if you want to get Moedi Wines into a Kenya, subject to registering with the relevant authorities, if you have then the distributor in the market, which can be the importer, that's how you can do that. Similar to China. You want to get your wine into China, you need to register with GAC, with the General Administration of China Customs. Once you're registered with them and you have an importer in China, you are able then to export the wine to China, and your importer on that side can be the importer who sells to a retailer. It can be a retailer. It can be a distributor who is also the importer, or it can be the importer who then sells to a distributor. You're not confined to have those things in place and spelled out. And also when it comes to, the beneficiation policies with the U.S. corridor, with an AGOA Act, which is really the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, which is to optimize and benefit African exporters and the exporters of their products with low tariffs on their products to get into the US. There's specific and technical requirements that must be met for the exporters to qualify for that benefit, in addition to that three-tier system that I spoke to. In the China context, they have the policy that's sort of emanated out of the Forum on China-Africa Cooperation, which is the most favored nation status, almost similar to Goa, where those countries that are have an MFN status, as we call it, are able to trade up to 97% of their product tariff-free into China. So an example of a country that recently got added to MFN is Mozambique. So they're able to trade their cashew tariff-free into China. And when they do so, the requirement is that because cashew is a raw unprocessed product, so if it's traded as a raw unprocessed product, it would then, the protocol is already in place and the exporter would need to be registered with China, with the General Administration of China Customs, and then have an importer or buyer on that side. And those are the requirements that need to be met when producing that product. So that's that's then sort of the practical elements of like how we look at that process. And as I'm saying, backward integrate. And so when we look at that wine that we want to support and where, you know, it can be exported to, we look at that, what is the market requirement, what is the regulatory requirements, and then the relationships, the strategic partnerships that we have, how does it help then that business, you know, bridge some of these barriers to be able to get the products to that market and then find our prospective buyer in line with also then using our strategic partners or ourselves in that market, if it's the market we're present in. So that's sort of the process that we then undertake and how it informs how we support a particular exporter. In this case, that you asked for a wine export.
All right, cool. I really like, you know, what you're saying, Lutando, because I think it really helps us to get into some of the practicalities and realities of a business like Moedi Wines and some of the things that they've had to, you know, think about along the way, some of the things that they have to have in place, some of the regulations, some of the rules, because there's so much more that goes into a business than simply having a good product. There are all these nitty-gritties that need to be, you know, thought about. And on that point, you know, Lesego, I wanted to get your sense on understanding, you know, all of these different nitty-gritties. And also what I asked Lutando earlier on about, you know, certain businesses being seen as, you know, plug and play and all that. Because just because something is seen as plug and play doesn't mean that it's as simple to actually plug and play. And a lot of the time in specialist industries, one of the challenges comes with a lack of being able to access the right information around how the industry works. And I think sometimes, at least from my experience engaging with different entrepreneurs, that's where part of the challenge of operating as a minority comes from, is that it almost seems as if, you know, certain knowledge areas, certain you know, suppliers, supply chains, and, you know, how the system works is almost closed off to people that aren't part of a particular club. What's been your experience, you know, around some of those aspects?
No, I think, you know, to your point, you know, understanding the opportunities that are out there, it's very, very critical, and that will require research. Hence, prior to launching, you know, our brand, we did so much homework, right? Research, figuring out where's the best market, right? Because you can't just be everywhere and you have to be very, very strategic. So we look at it from a different lens of who are South Africa's strategic trade partners, right? So in this instance, the US is one of South Africa's most important trade partner. And if you look at other trade policies that, you know, Lutando mentioned, AGOA is very, very important for us. from, you know, tariffs and the benefits that we get from that. And, you know, AGOA is also, South Africa is also one of the big beneficiaries of AGOA compared to other African countries as well. And part of it is because we have great financial systems in the country. We also have great infrastructure, which gives us an advantage, right? We have ports that function, right? And so I and understanding the US system, for me, it took time. As Lutando mentioned, it's a three-tier system. It's very, very complex. You know, every state, you know, you have to, where you're trading, you need to get your brand registered there. You need to pay taxes, federal taxes in those states. And so we needed to, you know, coming in and having this desire to export to the U.S. As you know, the U.S. market is big. For instance, California alone is the fourth biggest economy in the world. So when it comes to like scale, you will definitely have, you will not have a problem to scale. You just have to be very, very strategic, right? And so when we actually mapped out our strategy, we wanted to focus on specific states to start with. So we looked at California, one, because obviously California is also a state that produces wine. And it's also a warmer state. So in terms of like opportunities to scale in those markets and also bring in a brand and product from a different market, like a new world wine, as they call it, it provides us with a great opportunity, right? And so even in terms of like how we position our brand, you know, in terms of like telling our story, American consumers are moved by obviously the quality of the product that you're bringing into the market, but also the story that you're telling. And the fact that we, you know, we drive environmental sustainability, it's really something that's very, very important to us. And it resonates with a lot of consumers in terms of like the work that we're doing through with bees and supporting South African beekeepers, rural beekeepers. It's a story that consumers would like to see. So making sure that even from our branding, that's visible, right? We have QR codes that take people to our site and all of that. And, you know, other things like, you know, I guess connecting to millennials and Gen Zs, right? Because we felt like that particular, those particular groups were left out because wine can be seen as like snobbish. You know, there's also a need for like wine education. A lot of times, unfortunately, consumers are very intimidated by, you know, the wine culture and language. So one of the reasons why I also got into the business was to make wine accessible and fun, right? So understanding how to communicate even with consumers in different markets, like the British markets are a little bit different from the American markets, American consumers and all of that. And for me, finding, because I'm not physically in the US, and I think that's one of the challenges when you're trying to build a global business and you're based in South Africa, it requires me traveling to the US. I mean, this year, I think I've done like 8 or 9 trips doing activations in those key markets, doing tastings, you know, doing in-person trade shows, because people want to connect with you. And I think when consumers see you tell your story, I think it's more powerful, right? And so, you know, like any other brand, you need to be competitive, right? And so making sure that you set aside a budget for like activations, like in-store activations or at restaurants or at events, you know, you are like a sponsor or whatever. That's very, very, very important. And I saw that's where we lack. And that's where I saw the gap from a South African, I guess, wine brand perspective. Yeah. And so New York is also one of our key markets because of the, you know, there's on-trade and there's off-trade. New York thrives from restaurants and all of that. So, you know, the fact that you can actually sell your wines to multiple restaurants and some independent wine stores is very, very important. Texas is one of our key markets as well. So one, Texas has a large Black population. I mean, the economy of Texas is like, I guess, bigger than South Africa. It's big. So like I said, being very, very strategic in terms of where you launch and where your wine will most likely do well, you know. So Texas is one of our key markets. So within Texas, we're looking at Dallas. We're looking at Houston specifically. Yeah. And so we work with Bevstack. So Bevstack is our e-commerce fulfillment partner in the US. You know, unlike in South Africa, where you can just, you know, sell and buy wine, in the US, there's only a few retailers that you can partner with that can do all the fulfillment. So currently, We have a 40-foot container in the U.S. We have a warehouse in New Jersey. And BevStack is our fulfillment partner. So we actually fulfill and distribute to 40 states. Or yeah, we sell our wines to 40 states. And what I love about even working with BevStack is that they're very innovative in their approach. When we approach them, I mean, the CEO literally, you know, returned my email, literally, or responded to my email within like an hour or two, which is pretty impressive for a CEO of a company that size, right? So they are really interested in bringing, I guess, diverse products and stories from like the continent, which we don't see a lot of in those markets. And so I think for us, having partners, even in the US, that can do invoicing, that can do logistics and fulfillment was very, very important for us to have that in place before we even start launching a brand in the US market. And, you know, for us, having partners like Standard Bank and their support in terms of like providing trade finance as we scale in those big markets, it's very, very critical for a business like ourselves. And I was also privileged to be part of AGOA discussions in July. And what I got from there was, you know, the need to see, I guess, more people of color participating in trade opportunities in markets like overseas, especially in, you know, within commodities like alcohol, which, you know, one of the reasons why I also started Moedi was that I also did not see a lot of women in the industry, particularly women of color. So this obviously being, you know, South Africa being the producer of wine, I think it provides a lot of us with opportunities to not only, you know, have our own brands or be involved in the industry, but also export to key markets such as the US and the UK and Germany and the Netherlands.
One of the things that I appreciate about what you're saying, Lesego, is just one of the big realities of being an export-driven business is the fact that you have to spend a lot of time in the actual markets that you are selling in. I mean, even just at a local level, we know a lot of people in South Africa that do business in South Africa that are constantly going to engage, you know, with their clients, either within the cities that they operate in or going across provincial lines. And I can imagine, you know, the layer of complexity that it adds when, you know, your markets are international and, you know, what that does. You know, for either from a budget point of view or from a time point of view, and also just from a knowledge point of view of trying to navigate all of the different areas. So I think it's a very good way to give people what's actually realistically happening on the ground and what it actually takes. But where I want us to end off this discussion, at least on your side, is to get your sense on engaging with large institutions, you know, large lenders and financiers or partners in an ecosystem. Today, obviously, we are with Standard Bank. So when it comes to your relationship with Standard Bank, how do you make sure that you get the most out of that relationship and some of the engagements that you have with them as a business partner? Because we talk to a number of different business people, and one of the criticisms that is leveled against you know, banks and some of the large institutions is that the level of service, some small business owners feel like they don't really get their needs really taken care of or feel understood, you know, by larger organizations, because, you know, the larger organizations would rather be doing business with someone who's doing billions of dollars, billions of rands. So they feel like the level and quality of service that you get from institutions, you know, can be tough. But, you know, listening to you through today's discussion, it sounds like you've had a fruitful relationship, you know, with an institution like Standard Bank. What's your advice to small businesses on how they can, you know, leverage such relationships and get the most out of them?
Yeah, no, thank you. So my relationship with Standard Bank actually dates back to when I was a graduate student at the London School of Economics. So Standard Bank has a program that, you know, funds African students to study at, you know, institutions like such as Cambridge and LSE and Oxford. And I think one of the reasons, obviously, as an African bank was to actually equip people like ourselves to come back and be part of building businesses that really impact Africa. So the vision has always been, you know, how do we come back home with all the knowledge and experience? And that's pretty much been my experience starting Moedi. But the key, and I think what really would, I guess, inspire institutions like Standard Bank to invest in you is that, one, you need to have your skin in the game, right? You need to have done your homework, research in terms of like where you want to launch your product. And also, this has been my experience as well. You need to have skin in the game in terms of like investing capital as well. You cannot, you know, expect the bank to give you everything. You need to be, because also they need to assess risk, right? So for me, making sure that I've at least lended some of my wines into the US or even, you know, financing part of my container to the US is critical. And I think building a relationship as well, you know, having people that can journey with you, institutions such as Standard Bank that would take you, you know, walk with you and journey with you is very important. So it's constantly just reaching out and updating and starting small. You don't necessarily have to start big by, you know, sending 10 containers or one container or whatever. And I think it boils down to relationship building as well and sharing your vision and where you want to go. But a lot of it has to be driven by you need to do the work.
You need to do the work and skin in the game. Those are the two things I am definitely taking away from that point. Lutando, your take on this particular case, you know, as someone who's on the other side of that equation, how can small businesses make the most, you know, of their relationships with an institution like yours?
Thank you for the question, Andrew. I think I'll take the compliment from Maseho. And encourage, you know, small business or any business to engage us, you know, ask us to, you know, this is what you're thinking through relationship managers or even, you know, contact us directly via our website or our email address, which is bcbtrade, so trade at standardbank.co.za, you know, pop us your question or, you know, what you'd like to find out with, or what you need help with, and we'll be ready to assist. And I think that's the first engagement point to really understand, you know, what businesses are looking to do and what they're seeking help with. Because what we found is that businesses would engage this market access conversation at different stages of maturity. As you can hear from Lisele, she's done the work. And so for her, it was very intentional and deliberate in terms of how we, you know, support and assist her. Some businesses needed a little bit more hand-holding. Some are just trying to get the information, and through different, you know, tools, there's that access to information that we can also assist with some more details on specific markets that they may be looking for. And then the other important part, which I didn't spend too much time on, is then really just how, you know, we support through trade finance, which helps manage the risk of doing, you know, an import or an export through products such as our, you know, trade finance, which is a letter of credit, or it is to our guarantees, and really it ensures that you're able to trade with your counterpart, minimize the risk of, you know, in the event that, you know, the conditions aren't met, or if of either what you're importing from that supplier or, you know, your export, you know, when it's shipped off to your buyer. This is how the bank then also helps you manage that risk, and therefore obviously being able to do the payment, making it or receiving the payment. So that's, you know, really the core banking stuff. And then also in addition to that, you know, being available to businesses on the continent that are really saying that, you know, I'm looking to expand and grow my business by, you know, looking at new markets. And I think to your point that you mentioned, Madua, oftentimes exports specifically and also imports is sort of thought about, you have to be this big business turning over millions, you know, of brands. Really, as a small business, you could actually build and grow your business through being an exporter. And it's about understanding what is required of you and where you are thinking and where is your product, you know, like to define that market, and you have that buyer or market, you know, we're really standing ready to support you and help you with that market access. So I think we stand ready. We're available just to really assist those businesses that are, you know, intentionally thinking about this. But I also want to emphasize and re-highlight what Lesego mentioned around doing the work and really understanding where you want to play and understanding the product better in terms of this global space.
All right, nice. Lesego, there's some, you know, key things that Lutando was talking about, you know, around trade finance and, you know, some of the things that happen. But where I wanted, I had already said that's where I wanted to end off the conversation, you know, around leveraging your relationship. But I thought about something and I thought this would be a great place to give you the last word. Your business is very export driven, but there's a lot of debate sometimes around being an export business. Some people are of the mind that you must establish a local presence, a strong local presence and a big local presence, then you can use that to get out into your export market. Whereas other people are purely just a South Africa play and they keep it moving. Whereas other people will just be like a pure export-driven business. They understand that there's demand for what's in their market in another market. What's your thinking around whether or not a business should necessarily have to have a local presence before they can explore export markets?
I think it depends on so many things, right? It depends on where you want to play as a business, and that you should be able to establish that from the onset, right? So one, I mean, South Africa, we are producers of great wine. I mean, even for 30 rand, you can find good wine. That's not the case, you know, in overseas markets, right? So whereas you can actually get a good Chenin in New York for $15, right? And so for me, South African market is very saturated with very good wines. And there are so many opportunities outside of South Africa. You look at, you know, the African market, you know, West Africa, East Africa. You look at even trade opportunities that are available with the Africa Free Trade Agreements. So those are the spaces where I feel like we should be, playing. And to be honest, our market is also very small, right? So in order for you to reach the scale that you want to reach, right? So it also, it goes back to where you want to play as a business. If you want to do like boutique, small wines, you're doing like 2000 cases and you feel like your market is here, then great. So in my view, that's in my experience and in my business as Moedi Wines, we are more scale driven. So we're going to drive out like large volumes. And so looking at opportunities such as AGOA, it helps us to become more competitive. I can confidently compete with wines coming from New Zealand from quality standpoint, from price standpoint, because I produce in rands, right? And in my experience, I'm actually also importing my own wines into the US, right? So I don't depend on an importer to bring my own wines. I have my own warehouse in New Jersey, which is a total game changer for me, right? In terms of like, making a little bit more than what I would have if I had like an importer and all of that. And so that took a lot of research in terms of like figuring out where to play and also how to position your story. I find that, not that South Africans don't have appreciation for like storytelling and impact and all of that, but in certain markets, like the American markets, people have huge appreciation for social impact and, you know, and environmentally conscious products, you know, because that's where consumers are going, right? Same with Europe. I find that consumers are more receptive to that. Whereas here, because, I mean, it's saturated, as I mentioned, and our systems can be complex because you need to rely on like retailers to move your product, and it's like it can be complex. So a good use of our time and investment and energy was more looking at markets where we can best tell our story and scale and grow. And so as an importer into the US, my goal, the next steps for us is to actually be able to import other Black-owned brands into the U.S. market, because that's where we see the opportunity as well. I've been able to navigate the system. I understand the system, and I actually have a U.S.-based entity that can now import other brands as well. And I want to make it easier for people that are trying to enter the US market, but they are struggling. And so obviously having a partner like Standard Bank makes it easier, right, in terms of like growing African products in global markets together.
All right. So that's how we end off today's discussion. It has been, you know, great understanding, international trade through the lens of the wine business. It is an industry that South Africa is famous for, and we always hear, of the opportunity that these grapes provide. But today's discussion has really been great at unpacking some of the practicalities, of being an export-driven, wine company. Lesego giving us some insight into, her decision to go into the export market, starting off talking about the fact that she spent a lot of time overseas and, found it hard to find some of the South African brands in international markets and, saw that as a gap, to provide that and also, provide that at a relatively cheaper cost because, production is being done in rands compared to a stronger, selling currency, which would be the United States dollar. Also, at the end there, that rationale around the fact that South Africa is already a saturated market internally, and that, relatively small, compared to, individual states. She picked out the likes of California and Texas as being, single states that in and of themselves are bigger economies than the South African economy. So if you're able to attack the United States as a country, then that is a huge market opportunity that you can actually derive. And then bringing on a partner such as a Standard Bank that can help to navigate, some of the complexity that's in there. Lutando giving us some insight into the layers, that go into, selling South African wine into various markets, the US compared to China, and what actually needs to be in place for a business to be export ready, and some of the finance options, that are available, to make, some of that happen. And also at the same time, one of the things that he advised is that skin in the game, and also making sure that someone has done the work really does go a long way in inspiring confidence, because at the end of the day, a bank like Standard Bank is constantly assessing risk. And, on that discussion, Lesego, saying that, you need to really do your work and, know what your story is when you go, and engage with the likes of a Standard Bank or similar partners, and then actually giving us also the insight that you also need to be on the ground as well, not just to understand things academically, but to understand the realities that are on the ground. So that brings us to the end of today's discussion. It has been a really great one. We were in conversation with Lesego Hozapfel, who is from Moedi Wines, as well as Lutando Vuba, who is from a Standard Bank. Team, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Madhua.
Thanks, Madhua.
And that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcasts on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter with hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail. And this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is a good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.